Let's call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. The time is 10:03 a.m. Today is Tuesday, March 30th. Members present at this time, Representative McCabe, Representative Story, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Ortiz, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome to Representative Kronk, who's joining us in the audience. If we could please ask members to silence their cell phones. Also, again, if you need to pass a note, please seek the attention of the committee aide, Thatcher Brower. Want to thank Shannon McCain, our committee secretary, and Alec Banizak of the Juno LIO for their support. Thank you very much. As a reminder, the recording secretary is operating remotely, so we'd please ask folks to identify themselves before you speak. Before we get started, I did want to share some feedback we got from Legislative Legal Services, and of course our goal is to work with everyone as collaboratively as possible. And so we just wanted to share this, that when a committee sets a deadline, Legal Services uses that deadline to prioritize the work. So if exceptions are made, it makes it difficult for Legal Services to be able to best prioritize their workload. So we noticed, you know, with the Tuesday-Thursday meeting, if for a Tuesday to Thursday, that can be a quick time turnaround. So we just wanted to share that so that we can do our best to, you know, work with everybody and then also work with Ledge Legal to make sure that, you know, people can get their amendments done on time. So we'll do our best to do that, and we just wanted to share that they had passed that feedback along so that once we do set the amendment deadline, we'd like to stick to it in the interest of working with our Ledge Legal staff. Today we have two items on the agenda. We have House Bill 28, registration of boats, and then the first hearing for House Bill 41 from Representative Ortiz. House Bill 54, we just canceled that. Now that we're done with our budget subcommittees, we have a little more time for our regular committee work, and so we'll bring that back up on Thursday. So we're going to start with House Bill 28. To start, I want to point members to a couple of supporting documents in the packets that may help answer some of the questions asked at the last hearing. So one is the DMV registration frequently asked questions from 2019. This explains what boats are exempt from the registration and or titling requirement. A second item is information from the legislative finance analyst Connor Bell on how vessel receipts are used. A third is the legislative finance boat receipts allocation summary. And then the fourth is the legislative finance boat receipts fund source report. And if anybody does not have those documents, please let us know and we will get those right now for you. Also want to mention for committee members that we do have some folks online to answer questions for this bill. We have Dale Kelly, Commissioner with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. We have Jeffrey Smits, the Director of the DMV, Joseph McCullough, Alaska Office of Boating Safety and Boating Law Administrator, and Christy Culls, Operations Manager, Department of Natural Resources. So we do have those folks available. Mr. Brower, if you could please come forward. I think there are a couple comments you wanted to make about those documents.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, Thatcher Brower, staff to the House Fisheries Committee. I just wanted to address some of the questions that were put on the record last time. Representative Chris Tompkins was curious what boats were exempt from registration. And as the DMV FAQ shows, the boats that are currently exempt from registration include life boats, boats that don't have a source of power, boat registered in another state or country that does not operate for more than 90 days in the state, as well as a foreign documented boat. Except for titling is a boat less than 20, a boat less than 24 feet in length, a boat of any length documented with the U.S. Coast Guard, or a documented vessel that is also exempt from state numbering. Hopefully that answers the DMV question. I did want to also point members to the research provided, or the information provided by Legislative Finance. There were some quick questions about where the vessel receipts go. And if you look at that first document that was put together by Connor Bell, in FY20, this is the total vessel receipts collected, not just the commercial fishing vessels. The total vessels The receipts collected in FY20 were approximately $505,000. The total titling was approximately $20,000. And of that, $300,000 went to the DNR for the boating safety program, and approximately $197,000 went to the Department of Commerce, and that was used for the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, which they run a number of boating safety programs, both for commercial and recreational boaters. And then the remainder in FY20 was $27,603. And that's the amount that went to the derelict vessel fund.
Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you. I think just worth, you know, underlying for the committee's reference, as you say, it was $27,000 that LegFi said. I mean, so, you know, basically nothing. Which I know when the bill passed, there was sort of an understanding. But just, I think there was a perception when the derelict vessel bill passed that, like, there could be a funding source to, like, actually help clean up stuff. And we don't have one. And I was trying to think about whether there could be one, but I basically did not come up with any good ideas. So I just wanted to share that with the committee.
Thank you. I found this super helpful because we had just heard about the incident in Homer where they had to spend $100,000. So it puts it into perspective if there's only $27,000 left.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And actually on that subject, I believe Rachel, I might be missing the name, from the Alaska Harbor Masters Association, suggested she might follow up because I was interested why the owner was not held accountable in the Homer law. Like, now that we've passed this titling requirement, like, what gives that that's still happening? Because my understanding is that, like, in part, that's what the law was seeking to solve. And I'd like to understand why it has not solved the problem, at least in the Homer incident, or there was a similar SICA incident a couple months ago. So I, not to forestall progress on the bill, because it would be great to get it going, but I do want to just re-up that. I think that would be very helpful for the committee.
Thank you.
Yeah. For the record, she was going to query the Harbor Masters and get back to me. I'll follow up with her and make sure we get that information to the committee.
Thank you.
Perfect. Mr. Brower, did you have anything else you wanted to share about these documents?
No, Madam Chair, unless there are other committee questions. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Any other committee questions on those documents? Seeing none, that brings us back to the committee discussion and consideration of amendments. We do have one amendment. Speaker Stutes.
Madam Chair, I move Amendment 1 to House Bill 28, labeled 32-LS0299/A1.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. And Mr. Brower, could you help with the explanation for this amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Dr. Brower, staff of the House Fisheries Committee. This amendment was drafted at the request of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. They were concerned that the way the bill was drafted originally, that they would not be able to collect fees prior to the start of the calendar year. They typically bill in November and December for the upcoming year, and they were concerned they wouldn't be able to do that the way the bill was written. And so specifically what this does is it still states that beginning January 1, 2022, they're able to charge those fees. But what it does is in Section 6, it deletes the effective date of January 1, 2022. And that's for the section where the Section 3 that allows a Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission to collect those fees. And it was legislative legal's opinion that by deleting that effective date, that they would be able to collect the fees prior to the first of the year, first of 2022.
Thank you, Mr. Brower. We also have Dale Kelly from the CFEC online. If there are any questions for Ms. Kelly, and Ms. Kelly, did you want to add anything about this amendment?
I'm sorry. Madam Chair, can you go up a little bit?
Oh, pardon me. Thank you, Ms. Kelly. This is Representative Tarr, and we were just considering amendment number one related to the effective date, and so your ability to collect the fees prior to the first of the year, and I just wondered if you had any additional comments.
Only that we really appreciate the amendment being brought forward. Our licensing year always begins the year prior, so this will make it real clear for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any questions? Do we need to take an at ease? Are we okay sound wise? Or take an at ease? Just as at ease? One, two, three, four.
A little bit of a sound thing going on with the presenter microphone. Does someone be coming in too loud over there? Is that true?
Try this one.
Don't know. I thought she was going to be back, and maybe she had a flight issue. Oh.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sounds better.
A bit better.
Yeah, sounds better.
We'll go without that.
Okay. Okay, we're back on. Having some sound issues. There we go. All right, back on the record at 10:15. Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Were there any other questions about amendment number one? I will remove my objection. Are there any other objections to adoption of amendment number one? Seeing no objections, amendment number one has been adopted. That brings the committee discussion. That brings the bill back before us for committee discussion. Is there any further discussion? Okay, if there's no further discussion, Speaker Stutz, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to move House Bill 28, labeled 32LS0299/A, from committee as amended with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 28 will be moved. And I want to say, I think it may be LS0229. I think we might have a typo, so just to correct that on the record. But seeing no objection, this bill will move from committee, so we'll just take a brief at ease to do the paperwork. Our second item for today's meeting is House Bill 41. This is Shellfish Enhancement Projects, Hatcheries, and Fees. We are going to have the bill introduction invited and public testimony today. So, Representative Ortiz, this is your bill, and I think your staff is here with us, Liz Harpold. If you want to come forward and however you're going to present the bill. And then I'll just make note for committee members' attention. In 10 minutes, we're going to take a brief at ease. And Representative Story and I are just going to step out for a moment. Representative Stutz will take over the gavel for just a moment, and we'll just be right back. And so we'll just try to do that pretty seamlessly and not interrupt your presentation too much. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for agreeing to hear House Bill 41. It's a bill that should be very familiar to all the members, except for Representative McCabe, because we presented this bill in the last legislative session and got it nearly to the finish line, but like a few other bills, it was caught up by the COVID issue. So with that, House Bill 41 is an enhancement of Alaska's shellfish industry. It does hold the potential of expanded economic opportunities in Alaska coastal communities and increased resilience of the state fisheries portfolio. To tap this potential, House Bill 41 allows qualified nonprofits to pursue enhancement and/or restoration projects involving shellfish species, including red and blue king crab, sea cucumber, abalone, and razor clams. This bill creates a regulatory framework with which the Department of Fish and Game can manage shellfish enhancement projects and outlines criteria for issuance of permits. It sets out stringent safety standards to ensure sustainability and health of existing natural stocks. The Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game must also make a determination of substantial public benefit before a project can proceed. In addition, the bill allows the Department of Fish and Game to set the application fee for a shellfish enhancement project permit and grants the similar authority over the application fee for a salmon enhancement project permit. This bill also amends the statutes governing the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to allow ASME to market aquatic farm products, including oysters and kelp. Madam Chair, House Bill 41 plays an important role in the development of the mariculture in Alaska by providing a method to increase the available harvest of shellfish for public use in an environmentally safe and responsible manner. And with that, Madam Chair, that concludes my initial comments in relationship to the bill. If there's questions from the committee, I'll be glad to entertain those. I understand we have some public testimony invited testimony that's ready to testify in support of the bill, but whatever the will of you is, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Any questions for the bill sponsor at this time? Representative Stoops.
Thank you. I don't have a question necessarily, but I do have a comment, and I'm really excited to see the ability for ASME to market the aquatic farm products. I think that's really, really an important aspect of this legislation, so I really am grateful to the maker of it.
Thank you, Speaker Stoops. Representative Story, did you have a comment or question?
No, but I appreciate the comment of Speaker Stoops. I think that's very true. So thank you for bringing this back again.
Thank you. And did you want to have your staff do a sectional or anything right now?
Unless it's the will of the committee, I'm okay either way. I think we're fine without it, but
okay.
If you like it, that's fine.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and go to our invited testimony, and that way we make sure we get to everybody, and since we get to see you again, if we have more questions, how about that? So we do have some folks joining us via Teams, and then we have some other folks online. So the list that I have, Heather McCarty, President of the Mariculture Task Force, via Teams, we'd love to invite you to go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Heather McCarty speaking, and I think you can see me and hear me. Is that correct?
It is correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Madam Speaker and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. As you have said, I am the chairman of the Mariculture Task Force. We've been in existence since 2016. We are a child of the administration. We're the governor's task force, and our task force was renewed by this new administration, which has been very supportive. We started out in our task of prioritizing what needed to happen to make mariculture development in Alaska easier and better. and faster. And we've prioritized a number of impediments that we have found that need to be remedied, both statutory, regulatory, science and research, marketing, and so on. So we have, of course, prioritized the passage of this bill, House Bill 41, for a couple of reasons. One is, from regulatory slash statutory point of view, work on shellfish development and shellfish culture can go really no further than it already has without the passage of this bill to allow for implementing regulations to be put together by the department, by the state, and allow shellfish mariculture to progress into what it can be in Alaska. We've also identified marketing issues, and as Representative Stutes pointed out, this bill also allows ASME, it changes just a few words in the ASME enabling legislation to allow ASME to market non-wild capture seafood products, which means mariculture products. So we support both of those aims, and as I said, they are a priority of the Mariculture Task Force. I'd also like to speak to this bill from the point of view of a group that I work with. I work with one of the CDQ groups in the Bering Sea, Central Bering Sea Fishermen's Association on St. Paul Island. Way back, before the crash of Pribilof blue king crab, the Pribilovians enjoyed a robust king crab fishery on Pribilof blue king crab, which maybe none of you have heard of, but it used to be a really viable fishery around the islands, and it contributed to the processing of crab on St. Paul, which is really the sole industry on St. Paul Island. We have a Trident plant there that's the biggest one in North America. And of course, it processes some king crab from the Bristol Bay king crab stock, as well as snow crab. Right now, since the early 80s, there have been no Pribilof Island blue king crab. They're relatively sparse, so sparse that there has been no fishery allowed on them. The same thing holds true for the red king crab around Kodiak. And a lot of support has also come from Kodiak because that king crab stock is also at such low levels that there hasn't been a fishery there since the early 80s. It used to support a robust industry on Kodiak and was a big part of their economy. So on behalf of the CDQ group that I work for, I also put in support for this bill because the goal of shellfish mariculture has been to focus on king crab culture and king crab restoration. And we hope that through the programs that we have put together and through this bill allowing larger scale production of crab, that we can turn that around. We also would say that Bristol Bay king crab is also on the verge of being depleted, which would mean that there would be no red king crab coming from the Bristol Bay area either. King crab is in trouble, and we need to figure out why and how. I'll also speak very briefly on behalf of ACRAB. ACRAB is an acronym that we came up with. It's the Alaska King Crab Research, Rehabilitation, and Biology Program. We put that together back in 2006, and we knew that in other places in the world, crab was cultured and successfully, and was a big part of some of other countries' economies. So we put together a program that thus far has been basically a decade and a half of research into king crab particularly, but recognizing that the technology and the understandings that we gain from the program can be transferred to other crab stocks. We have successfully reared both red and blue king crab to the first crab stage of life, which teeny tiny little crabs, which can then be raised to adulthood or allowed to be in the wild and become adults. So we have the technology. We've done research in every aspect of the crab life cycle, including genetics, the habitat that's preferred by king crab, et cetera, et cetera. We have 35 published research projects that are peer-reviewed and published in peer-reviewed journals regarding the research that we have done on crab. This is the next stage, and we can't go any further with our work until this bill basically is passed. So I ask on behalf of all three of those organizations that I'm part of for you to pass this bill, and we appreciate it, and I'm happy to take any questions that you may have on any of those aspects. We do have someone speaking right after me, I believe, Dr. Ginny Eckert, who is the co-chair of the ACRAB program, a CRAB scientist, and our chief scientist for the CRAB project. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We really appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for our testifier? Representative McCabe has a question.
And through the chair, thank you, ma'am. Heather, I'm interested to know, I was in Kodiak, on Kodiak in 1981, and used to catch my limit of kings, big kings, pretty much every day. And then they started to go away pretty fast. I heard it was overfishing. I also heard it was a parasite. So if it was a parasite that created some of the stock depletion around Kodiak, what's to prevent that same parasite from maybe even flourishing in a situation where we had a hatchery that put forth a bunch of king crab and maybe decimating the natural population that wasn't come out of the hatchery?
Madam Chair, Representative McCabe, thank you for the question. There's been a lot of scientific work done, some of it pretty recently, on what happened with red king crab in the Kodiak area. Most people have settled on the fact that it was probably overfished. So that's what I sort of know about what happened to the wild king crab stocks around Kodiak. As far as parasites go, I have not heard that theory, and we haven't heard it during the time that we've been doing research on this. Dr. Eckert can probably address that issue better than I can, because since she's a crab biologist and she may have heard of that. But so I actually don't believe that that has been sort of the most an accepted explanation for the drop in the king crab stocks around Kodiak. And as far as how we might prevent that, there are so many checks and balances in every hatchery, and of course there's checks and balances through the Department of Fish and Game to prevent exactly what you're talking about in any species. I think that's not a realistic fear, in my view.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Ms. McCarty. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, Madam Speaker. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up, I would like to invite Sam Rabung, Director of Commercial Fisheries for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Director Rabung. Oh, there he is. Good morning, Director Rabung. If you could identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, and then give us your invited testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Speaker. Good morning, Madam Speaker and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to be here. For the record, I'm Sam Rabung, Director of Division of Commercial Fisheries, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'm also a member of the Governor's Mariculture Task Force, which was established in 2016 by former Governor Walker and was reinstated and extended by Governor Dunleavy. The ADF&G mission statement says we are to protect, maintain, and improve the fish, game, and aquatic plant resources of the state and manage their use and development in the best interest of the economy and the well-being of the people of the state, consistent with the sustained yield principle. Alaska Statute 16.05.092 says, in part, the department shall encourage the investment by private enterprise in the technological development and economic utilization of the fisheries resources and through rehabilitation, enhancement, and development programs do all things necessary to ensure perpetual and increasing production and use of the food resources of state waters and continental shelf areas. This work was under the purview of the Fisheries Rehabilitation Enhancement and Development Division, or FRED, of ADF&G until 1994, when FRED Division was merged with the Division of Commercial Fisheries. The Division of Commercial Fisheries still operates the pathology, gene conservation, and mark tag and age labs, and has contracted out the operation of our salmon hatcheries to private nonprofit aquaculture associations. We provide permitting and oversight through our statewide aquaculture planning and permitting section here in ADF&G headquarters. The section is responsible for the salmon hatchery program, the aquatic farming program, and permitting of research and educational projects statewide. Currently in Alaska, mariculture is limited to aquatic farming, which means a facility that grows, farms, or cultivates aquatic farm products in captivity or under positive control. Aquatic farm product is considered private property, just as livestock is on a terrestrial farm, and aquatic farming primarily benefits private owners and businesses. In contrast, another form of mariculture is fishery enhancement. This entails the restoration, rehabilitation, or enhancement of natural production, and this benefits the common property fisheries, subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial, rather than private ownership. This is what would be allowed if HB 41 becomes law. For your reference, restoration means restoring a stock to a location where it has been extirpated and no longer exists, and bringing it back to a level that can be naturally produced and sustained. Once achieved, the project ceases. A rehabilitation means assisting a poorly performing stock to recover to its former level that can be naturally produced and sustained. And once achieved, the project ceases. An enhancement means producing additional numbers of naturally producing stock above what it can produce in nature in order to provide additional harvestable surplus. If the project ceases, the supplemental production goes away and production of the stock reverts back to what can be naturally sustained. One example of a mariculture restoration project is the Alaska King Crab Research and Biology, or ACRAB program, which Ms. McCarty just spoke about. This program seeks to plant juvenile king crab from nearby stocks into locations that supported these stocks until the 80s when they were overfished and have not recovered, even with 35 or more years of fishery closures. The only tool the ADF&G has at this time to recover these stocks is to keep the fisheries closed. With the passage of HB 41, there will be another tool to try. Some examples of mariculture rehabilitation projects are collecting adult razor clams from the east side of Cook Inlet, inducing them to spawn in a hatchery, and planting those juveniles back onto the same beaches where the parents came from. This could increase recruitment into the fishery and help that stock recover. This could also be done for hardshell clams that have diminished in Kachemak Bay due to overharvest and sea otter depredation. Another project could be collecting and aggregating abalone in southeast Alaska in order to increase their density and thereby their spawning success. There's an awful lot of projects that could be done under these categories. There's not a one-size-fits-all. An example of a mariculture enhancement project is backstocking sea cucumber juveniles immediately following a dive fishery. And dive fisheries are typically occur on a three-year rotation, so we'll harvest the same site about every 3 years. Increasing the number of juveniles will potentially increase recruitment into the fishery and provide for increased yields. And this could be done in perpetuity to produce additional or supplemental harvest. And like with our salmon fishery enhancement programs, if HB 41 passes, this work will be subject to pathology, genetic, and management oversight from Fish and Game. Alaska already has the most stringent aquaculture guidance in the world and is held up as an example, as the example, of how to do it right in a manner that minimizes negative effects on natural production and maintains the sustainability of natural production and the fisheries and people who depend on it. And that will not change. And with that, I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Raybong. Appreciate your testimony this morning. Any questions? Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you. And I don't know if this is for Mr. Raybong or the sponsor, but I was noting on page 9, line 24, there's a definition for genetically modified shellfish, and I was trying to find where in the legislation genetically modified shellfish was mentioned, and I just skimmed through a couple times and couldn't find it immediately, and also can't seem to use the control F find function on my iPad to find it. So I was wondering if someone could point me in the direction of why that's being defined and where it appears in the legislation.
Deputy Commissioner Raybong, can you help us out with that one? I'm not sure I could.
Through the chair, Rep. Bryce Tompkins, and for the record, it's Director Raybung.
Sorry.
I don't have the copy of the bill in front of me, but it is important to note that genetically modified is a defined term. I don't know if it's defined in statute, but we would not allow, per our genetics policy, any genetic manipulation of a stock that is intended to be released into the wild. These are intended to be maintained as wild with the minimal manipulation possible, if that answers your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In part, it does, and it might be that I'm just, you know, reading that maybe, well, this is in section four, it's adding a new chapter, so presumably this is a new definition that's being added in law. I think what you said, Director, reflects my curiosity and interest, which is we don't want to be genetically modifying creatures that are going to be entering wild ecosystems, and maybe we just revisit this with maybe another testifier.
And Representative Chris Tompkins, I have a question, so I was just going to chime in after that, but what I can say is in our work on genetically modified salmon that the company that produced that product had several others in the queue that they were interested in, including shellfish. So I've always considered that a concern that we would want to watch out for. And I have not recently checked into where they are. They really, through that federal process, really shifted and removed all of that stuff off their website a couple of years ago as they were trying to get through the approval. And so I haven't checked more recently, but I have some of their documents from just before that where it showed a number of other species that they were interested in producing a genetically modified version. Director Raybung, I did have a question. You were talking about these depleted fisheries from the 80s, and I was just wondering, because we always talk about Alaska having such a strong fisheries management and program and being kind of the envy of other places, so just in the 80s, what I'm thinking that means is we were doing things differently, that we hadn't kind of adopted what we're doing today. And I'm just wondering if you think, you know, if we had a sort of what we're doing today and put a program in place back then, if we would have a sustainable fishery in those places now.
Chair Tarr, that's a great question. What I can say is that we're always learning, and crab biology and crab management, in the 80s, we learned a lot. One way that we learn what the limits are is to exceed them. And in hindsight, that's what it looks like happened in a lot of these crab stocks. So once they're fished down, then there's what we call downward pressure on the stock that prevents it from recovering. That would be generally predation. Concurrent with overfishing those stocks, though, we also have what we refer to as the regime change, when environmental conditions in the ocean shifted to benefit finfish such as pollock and flounders and things like that, whereas prior to that, the things were very beneficial to crab. So there was kind of two things that happened at once.
Thank you. Very helpful for me. Any other questions for Director Raybung? Okay, I'm not seeing any at this time. Thank you so much for your time today. Next in our invited testimony is Jenny Eckert, Director of the Alaska Sea Grant.
Hello, this is Jenny. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Great. I wanted to first, let me introduce myself. My name is Jenny Eckert. I am a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the director at Alaska Sea Grant. I'm a shellfish expert. I have a PhD. I've been in Alaska here since 2000. And since the start of the ACCAR program, I've served as its science director. I did want to stop and answer Representative Chris Tompkins' question. On page 4 of the bill, it does say that the conditions of a permit requires that the permittee will not procure genetically modified shellfish, so or not place genetically modified shellfish into the waters of the state, so that important regulation is in the bill. Back to my testimony, I just want to thank you, Representative Ortiz, and the legislature and this committee for your work on this bill. I've testified several different times in support of previous versions of this bill, and thank you for passing it in previous instances. You've already heard a lot, so I'll try to hold my comments to be brief. You've already heard that we have these fisheries that have been depleted, particularly king crab, and as Director Raybung said, you know, these stocks crashed in the 80s. They have not recovered. The scientific evidence absolutely supports that overfishing was the cause of the decline. The fishing rates were very high back then, and we didn't really understand that. And there was also bycatch in trawl fisheries, which we didn't really understand as well. And people just thought these, you know, crabs were unlimited. Like you said, you go out, you get them, you think they're going to be there forever until they're not. So since those fisheries have crashed, they were closed. These fisheries, in Kodiak in particular, have not been fished in a very long time, and they have not recovered. So in the last decade, my colleagues and I have published, as Heather said, a very large number of scientific publications. We've done a variety of different work on many different aspects of king crab life history. We've looked at what's going on in the wild, and we're pretty convinced that, particularly in Kodiak, where we've done much of this work, that these king crabs are not recovering on their own. There's no natural recruitment happening. So in the case of a lack of natural recruitment, hatchery production could be one way to help restore this population. So hatchery, and with the work we've done, we've developed methods for hatchery rearing. As Ms. McCarty said, we've done research on the genetics to better understand the genetics. And it is absolutely possible to safely and in very scientifically manageable ways make sure we address genetic concerns. These genetic concerns are absolutely valid, but there are mechanisms to address them. Some of the genetic concerns that get brought up relate salmon to crab. And I just want to point out that salmon have very different life histories from crab. So salmon reproduce to the stream where they were born, and actually it's biologically fascinating. Salmon are actually inbred on purpose, and it works really well for them. Crab are very different, and rearing crab in hatchery is very different as well. So we would use animals from the wild that have reproduced in the wild and just raise them up in a hatchery. So all that natural selection has already happened in the wild, and so that ensures, and using a good number of them ensures genetic viability of these stocks. So I also want to mention that this bill, you know, it's not just about king crab. As Director Raybung said, there are a variety of other species that this could be used on. And I do want to mention that Washington State has a very successful project that's outplanting very small little tiny baby abalone right now that is doing very well. And it stands as a model for the kind of work that we could do in Alaska if this bill were to pass. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Eckert. And thank you for your great work. We have a question from Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. Through the chair, I just really want to thank you for more of a comment, really. Thank you for your hard work on this. I see this as critical, really, to get going for our state. And I know you said you've testified numerous times on this, and I'm hoping that this year will be the time that it goes through and becomes law. So thank you.
I have a question, Dr. Eckert. I'm just curious. You mentioned some of the bycatch issues, and of course, that's an ongoing issue that, you know, hopefully we come up with better technologies to resolve. But in the, you were talking about the absence of natural recruitment, and I'm just, are those two connected at all in the scientific research? And just trying to understand sort of like what other environmental conditions or, you know, predation are creating the circumstances where there's not any natural recruitment occurring.
Yeah, that's through the chair. That's a great question, or to the chair. That's a great question. What's going on is that so king crab aggregate together, and they like to travel around in these packs, and maybe you've even seen, there's amazing photographs of just piles and piles and piles of crab. So they naturally aggregate together. We think much of that aggregation has to do with reproduction. And so if there aren't enough animals out there, you don't get that critical mass to have successful reproduction. And so we think that we've depressed the stock to such a level that it's not able to naturally rebound. So that's the idea. Now, you know, even though the fisheries are closed, there still is some bycatch happening that potentially is helping to also sort of keep it depressed. But the you know, the nature of the biology of this animal is such that it's there's terms for it, but basically it's depressed at such a level that it's sort of stuck in that hole, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you. Very helpful. No other questions? Thank you, Dr. Eckert, for joining us and for your ongoing support of this and your great work in our state. Really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And then I think our final invited testifier is Jeremy Woodrow, the executive director of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. I think also joining us via Teams.
Hello, Madam Chair. This is Jeremy. I'm on the phone.
On the phone. That works just as well. Welcome, and please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of House Fisheries Committee, for the opportunity to speak to you today. For the record, my name is Jeremy Woodrow, and I'm the executive director for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, also known as ASME. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is established in statute as a public-private partnership to foster the economic development of Alaska seafood resources. It plays a key role in positioning Alaska seafood industry as a competitive, market-driven food production industry and functions as a brand manager of the Alaska seafood family of brands. Recognizing mariculture in an emerging maritime industry with tremendous opportunity for Alaska's global economy, ASME supports HB 41. Mariculture involves cultivating marine organisms in the ocean for food and other products such as oysters, mussels, abalone, gooey duck, as well as seaweed such as kelp. The practice does not require feed, fertilizers, insecticides, herbicides, or antibiotics, making it sustainable and inexpensive. Because of the economic and environmental promise, the Alaska Mariculture Task Force has identified the goal to build Alaska's mariculture production into a $100 million per year industry in 20 years. In order to increase jobs and economic opportunity for fishermen and Alaskan businesses, the ASME Board of Directors unanimously supports HB 41 and legislative action to allow for the marketing of mariculture products or aquatic farm products as defined in Alaska Statute 1640-199, which ASME is currently prohibited from doing so. It is joined in support of this bill by the Alaska Seafood Industry, the Alaska Mariculture Task Force, and the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association, as well as many new Alaskan-owned and operated businesses. Not only does mariculture present a significant economic opportunity for Alaska, it offers the ability for seafood companies to diversify their existing product portfolios. With the support and efforts of the Mariculture Task Force, small family businesses have already proven products to be commercially viable by selling petite products while offering fishermen opportunities to utilize their vessels, equipment, and skills during shoulder seasons. If passed, ASME plans to include mariculture products in its effective and lucrative consumer, retail, food service, and food aid marketing programs in domestic and targeted foreign markets. In efforts to ramp up this burgeoning industry, ASME will lend the same expertise and outreach to the mariculture industry as it has to Alaska's seafood industry for 40 years. Thank you for recognizing the value of Alaska's maritime economy and for your consideration of meaningful legislation to aid economic development across Alaska's coastal communities. I'm also available for questions should there be any. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woodrow. We really appreciate your testimony this morning. Do we have any questions for Mr. Woodrow? Okay, well, it doesn't appear we have any questions for you this morning, but we really appreciate hearing from you. Thank you. And I'm sure we will be hearing from you at another meeting coming up very soon. I don't have anyone else listed for invited testimony. So that will close our invited testimony, and we will go to the public testimony. I'll go ahead and open the public testimony. First, I'm seeing online is Julie Decker from Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation.
Hello, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Tarr, and to the committee members today. I am here to offer support for this bill on behalf of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. We have strong support for HB 41, and as you heard already, the bill would do two things, both create a framework from which to develop shellfish enhancement, and it would also allow for ASME to market aquatic farm products, which would help develop the new mariculture industry. This bill accomplishes two of the priority recommendations of the Mariculture Task Force, which is part of a larger plan to fully develop the mariculture industry in Alaska with the goal to grow a $100 million per year industry in 20 years. ASDS membership is comprised of seafood harvesters, seafood processors, and support businesses. Founded in 1978, ASDS mission is to identify opportunities common to the Alaska seafood industry and develop efficient, sustainable outcomes that provide benefits to the economy, environment, and the communities. One of the more recent opportunities that ASDS has been promoting is mariculture development in Alaska. I have also, like some of the other people you heard testify today, served on the Mariculture Task Force since 2016. I will keep my comments brief and more focused on shellfish enhancement as an economic opportunity. It can help diversify and expand the economies in coastal Alaska and increase harvests for sport, subsistence, and commercial use, similar to Alaska's salmon enhancement program. In a recent news story, it was stated that Alaska salmon hatcheries in 2020 again contributed nearly 30% to the state's total salmon catches. So I'd like you to think about the possibility of this bill creating something similar that we have in our salmon enhancement program, something so substantial that it could add an additional 30% to what is currently harvested statewide. ASDS believes that growth of the mariculture industry can play an important role in Alaska's economic recovery from COVID-19, and passage of HB 41 is critical to fully enabling that economic potential. It's exciting to think about what the future holds for Alaska's shellfish fisheries and for the development of mariculture once this bill is passed. I thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'll stand by.
Thank you, Ms. Decker. We really appreciate your testimony this morning, and we do have your letter also in the packet. Any questions for our testifier? Okay, I'm not seeing any this morning. Thank you for joining us. Next, we're going to go to Nancy Hillstrand.
Yes, hi. My name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. I've been in the fisheries for 45 years, and my motive here is in talking to you is my deep concern for the wild fisheries and the lack of compliance that I see. I mean, there's a lot of good things go on with fish and game, of course, but there is some lack of compliance that is going on with these same statutes in regards to salmon. And I'll bring your attention to Section 1612.050B, and I'm wondering if you can maybe look at this and tell me how that the Board of Fisheries will be involved in making any amendments to the original hatchery permits. Right now, they are completely have been disregarded in the salmon hatchery permits, and any alterations are being done through a RPT, which is a regional planning team, and then it goes back to the commissioner, who is supposed to then send it off to the Board of Fisheries and use the Administrative Procedures Act. So I just see a lot of different things in this bill that we're missing, and it's important to look at not only understanding opportunities, but also understanding impact. I have a paper here that is on mariculture, and it says Section 1, Understanding Impacts, Section 2, Understanding Opportunities. And so if you look under the impacts, you see, you know, impacts to marine species, impacts to seabed habitats, impacts to genetic diversity, and, you know, there's like 12 of them here, impacts to detritus. And so we're looking at just the one side, and there's two sides of the story. And I think it's really important that we get these all under control so that we aren't just jumping off the cliff at the same time. I really appreciate what has been done in the lines of culture. I was a fish culturist for 21 years with the department, and so I understand what it means to start something new, because we started in the 70s on salmon culture, but there was a lot of mistakes that happened, and so I don't see a framework here. I don't see a comprehensive plan, which at least the salmon had. It was 1610-375. Is there going to be a regional planning team that knows about crab? Is there going to be a comprehensive plan written so we know what we're doing prior to this, or is this just going to be a mismatch of not knowing, you know, of fragmented management? There was, when we started the hatcheries, there was 120 people within the FRED division. They were created before these statutes came, And right now, you have very few people in the department that understand the animal husbandry required with something like this. So I just see a lot of problems. I also sent you the 1991 Alaska State Legislative Review on the effects of hatcheries and the wild fish. And can we add to that? I mean, would that be asking too much to continue that review? It's 30 years old, and I think that's something we need so we can form a consensus and get more under our belts of exactly what we are doing to make sure we don't damage the wild fisheries in Alaska. Yes, crab is a problem with not growing back, but do we make things worse by not, you know, by taking some of the broodstock out of there without, you know, does Fish and Game know about this? And I don't mean Fish and Game, the appointees. I mean the Fish and Game on the ground. Has anyone talked to them in Kodiak and in ADAC, you know, the actual people that will be supplying these permits to take broodstock? It's very important that we find these things, these questions out before we do this, because there's a lot of pressure from industry that will be placed on the Fish and Game people on the ground. So please look at the ecosystem repercussions. Please look at all of these impacts and form a comprehensive plan, continue this affects, you know, the statutory or the legislative reviews on hatcheries so that we can do more than just what has happened so far, which is one small laboratory creating crab. And, you know, we need maybe incremental, something that puts a stopgap. How do you stop this thing once it starts, or how do you slow it down? And I think the Board of Fisheries, again, please look at 1612.050. B, which that is not being used. In fact, just yesterday they're passing another law and they're bypassing the Board of Fisheries again. Now why? Why are we passing that? That's a check and balance that needs to be in there. It brings it up for the public to understand what's going on instead of just letting industry run off with this. And anyway, I thank you very kindly. Please look into this as much as you possibly can. There are two sides to the story, and I've been working on this a lot. There is a hatchery committee in the Board of Fisheries. I would just like to see more people really understand what this means before we go running off thinking everything's fine when we already have some problems within the salmon hatchery industry. Thank you very kindly for listening to my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Hillstrand. We appreciate your testimony this morning. Do committee members have any questions for the testifier? Okay, I'm not seeing any this morning. I would like to ask Director Raybong if you're still available, sir, to respond to some of those suggestions. I know when we've had bills in the past myself, you know, I've always had a concern about impacts to wild stocks, you know, for the genetics reason, but I've felt pretty assured by what has been presented on this bill so far. I wondered if you could respond to what we just heard, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Tarr. I guess what we just heard is what I would categorize as grossly misinformed, and since we've heard from the same commenter many, many times over the years, I would say willfully misinformed. There has been many Department of Law opinions and interpretations of our statutes in regards with Board of Fish authority versus Commissioner's authority. It's clearly laid out in statute that the Commissioner's authority is permitting and the Board of Fish's authority relates to allocation of harvest. So that's not a question. All of our hatchery all of our existing salmon hatchery, which this, to be clear, this bill doesn't equate to salmon hatcheries, but I will respond to the salmon hatchery assertions. They've all been reviewed for compliance with statutes, regs, and policies that the state has, and those are published and they're available on our website, and that's all been done in the last 10 years. So the first ones were published in about 2010, 2011. And we've done every single one of them. And they've all been found in compliance. Of course, we find some housekeeping things that we've rectified. we also have spent a considerable amount of time in the last 10 years gaining a firm legal understanding of our statutes and regulations that guide these programs, Quite frankly, you know, the department is made up of individuals, and every individual has opinions. But what we found was happening was, I guess I would characterize it as a misinterpretation of some of our guidance. And so we have that, we've had that since clarified with Department of Law, and we have a firm understanding of our guidance, and everything we do is within that guidance. The other thing I would say is that we don't see harm from our hatchery programs. We're looking for it. There's a lot of assertions that are there, but we can't see it. So our hatchery, salmon hatchery production has been at its current level since the mid-90s. In the last 10 years, we've had 3 of the 4 record wild stock harvests in the history of the state. We've had poor returns also in other places. Salmon runs are cyclical and have ups and downs. But we don't see a significant negative effect on natural productivity from our hatchery practices. That's not to say we're not looking for them. We're spending a lot of effort looking for these things and ensuring that if we can make improvements in the program, we'll know about it, and we will try to do that. I think that encapsulates most of this. One other thing that was mentioned was a lack of a oversight. There is a provision in this bill, I believe it's 1612.110, in the permit issuance that states that the commissioner shall consult with and solicit recommendations from federal and state agencies and technical experts in the relevant area regarding permit stipulations and issuance. So the intention is not to do this in a vacuum, but to gain all of the, the most valid input and assistance we can get to make sure that we're not doing harm. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Rabong. That helps me understand things greatly. Any questions for the director in response to the public testimony we heard? Okay, thank you, Director. The last person I have here is Angel Drobnica from the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association. Angel?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning. We can hear you. I don't know if you can hear us. We're not able to hear you. It's kind of like you're in the background, too far away from a mic.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello.
We're hearing you say hello, and then it's kind of cutting out.
Good morning.
Why don't you go ahead and just try and introduce yourself and say your testimony, and let's see what we hear.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Angel Drobnica. I'm a member of the Mariculture Task Force, and I also represent the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association, one of 6 CDQ groups whose mission is to advance fisheries-related economic development in remote communities in Southwest Alaska. We believe mariculture is very complementary to our mission and could provide an important opportunity for diversification in our existing fishing operations and businesses. I appreciate the opportunity to provide some brief comments this morning in continued support of HB 41. This bill has been in the queue for a number of years, and we are certainly hopeful that it will make it through the finish line this session. We believe HB 41 provides an important next step for Alaska's growing mariculture industry by allowing a regulatory pathway for enhancement projects that could result in meaningful common property opportunities, help diversify existing fishing operations, and increase food security. In addition, we have supported past efforts of the at-craft program, which has been mentioned in from past testifiers. As Ms. McCarty stated, crab fisheries are hugely important to the CQ program and to rural Alaska communities throughout throughout the state. As you've heard, this bill could provide a pathway for restoration and enhancement, particularly for some of those stocks experiencing clients right now. We greatly appreciate your consideration and your continued work on this bill, as well as that of your staff, as we encourage you to move HB 41 out of committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We really appreciate hearing your testimony this morning and not seeing any questions for the testifier. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online or in the room that wishes to testify? Okay, seeing and hearing no one else, I'll go ahead and close public testimony. That brings the bill back before us for discussion. Representative Ortiz, do you have any comments?
I do not, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, we had talked before as the bill sponsor about potentially moving the bill today if it sounded like members were supportive of that and didn't have any questions. And so, Representative Ortiz, as I understand, you've been able to talk with members of the committee?
I have.
And what's been reported to me is no amendments or additional questions for this legislation. And so, with the blessing of all of the members of the committee and that level of support, I'd be comfortable moving it here after the first committee hearing. Okay, not seeing any opposition to that, I would entertain a motion. Representative Story.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 41, labeled 32-LS0291/B, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay, seeing no opposition, then House Bill 41 will move from committee. If we could please ask members just to stick around for just 1 second to sign the paperwork. Our next committee hearing is Thursday, April 1st at 10 a.m. We had listed House Bill 107 by Representative Gillum, Military and Veterans Affairs, Fish and Game Licenses. Representative Gillum's office asked that that bill be pulled from committee, and so we have canceled the bill hearing on that. We have House Bill 64, Fishery Development Association and Assessments, and then House Bill 54, Invasive Species. I pulled that off the calendar knowing once we finish the budget work, we'd have a little more time. So I'd like to come around and I'll be talking with everyone to see about any amendments on the invasive species bill and hope to have support. Of course, that one is a committee bill. Want to make sure to put in the extra effort to make sure everyone's comfortable. Is there any other business to come before the committee this morning? Okay, well, thank you guys so much. Seeing no business more business to come before us this morning, we will adjourn at 11:13 a.m.